Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a bonus show. How about this? It's Friday afternoon, Kaplan. We're coming in with a new... I don't even know if we call this Lost in America. What do you think? I'll let you do the honors of making the big announcement.
We have decided that we are very smart. We've always been a very smart podcast, correct?
Of course, you've always
considered us geniuses, some say. Not you, the audience. I mean, you come to us for, we bring you smart guests, and we've decided to join after a lot of negotiations with we have decided to create. That's the word. You're right. You know, we ran this by Blue Shirt. He looked over the contract. Everything looks good. So we have created a network of fellow geniuses.
Yes.
Podcasters called, the drum roll is, World Smartest Podcast Network.
World Smartest Podcast Network, everybody. Very excited to be here. It is Kaplan and I. It is the Lost in America podcast. It is Andrew Heaton's, and you love him, the mighty Heaton, right?
One of our favorite regular guests here.
Regulars, his podcast, The Political Orphanage. And it is Andrea Jones-Roy's. We know her from this show. She's been on this show multiple times. Andrea Jones-Roy's show, Ask a Political Scientist, which is currently a YouTube show on Thursday nights live, will be a podcast very soon. So the three of our podcasts have come together to form a network, idea being we share our audience with them. Hopefully you guys give them a listen and their audience gives us a listen, because we're all doing something similar, but none of us are doing the same thing. And I don't want to repeat what we're going to say later on in the episode, but let's just say that we are comedy-based shows. I would say you and I are the most comedic, but everyone's a comedy-based show, right? These are all, they're also comedians. Heaton's a stand-up comedian. Andrea Jones-Roy is a stand-up comedian. But we're approaching smart topics.
Exactly, smart topics. We have shows with a very similar audience, size-wise and intelligence-wise, I'm sure.
And maybe even most importantly, in a nonpartisan way is how we're doing it.
Yeah, so we're not,
This isn't going to be something you could hear on CNN, something you could hear on Fox News. It's
NPR,
none of that. MSNBC, none of that.
Daily, any of that stuff, no.
Andrew Heaton's great show, The Political Orphanage. He goes straight down the middle talking American politics to high-end thinkers who are nonpartisan. He goes to the name says it all, Political Orphanage. He goes to great lengths to be nonpartisan. Andrea's show, the Ask a Political Scientist, she is a data scientist. She gets on another data scientist or political scientist, brings on a comedian, and they go deep into the data of how politics is, not politics, how elections are playing out and why they're playing out how they're playing out.
Exactly.
So you're going to learn something and not be preached to by all three of us.
Right. And us, of course, we're going to give you a lot more international. You're going to learn a lot more about the international world.
Exactly. We're hitting the rest of the world.
We're not diving deep into American politics per se. So that's why we're covering all the bases now.
American politics almost exclusively.
Yeah. So, you guys are going to go to a cocktail party. You know, we're obviously the choice one. You listen to us first before you go to the party so you can impress people what you know about Russia or Belarus or Lebanon, anywhere. But then you might want to mix in some American data science. You might want to mix in some political science and political philosophy. Andrew Heaton is a top-notch blowhard. He will give you some great tidbits.
So that's, we're recommending these two shows to you because we know them, we love them, we endorse them. We're giving them our endorsement.
Seal of approval.
Yes, much like McCain's wife just endorsed Biden, which was
out of the blue. We are the Cindy McCain. Who's Cindy McCain?
Cindy McCain of podcasting is what we've long been called.
So we're going to once a month joined forces to create a bonus episode, which is this one.
Which is what we're doing right here, right? Yeah. So we've decided the best way to create synergy among the shows is it's not just lip service. We're not just telling you to go listen to them. Once a month, we're going to be doing a bonus show. This exact show you're about to hear is going to be airing on their show, on their feeds, both of their feeds and our feeds, all three of our feeds. It's a roundtable discussion of sorts, much like the sports reporters. You remember them, right, Cap?
Yeah, this is the sports reporters. I'm Andrew Heaton is Dick Schaap.
Yes.
I'm the Mike Lupica, I think.
I wanted to. Who am I? Bob Ryan. Lupica?
You could be the Bob Ryan.
Yes.
Don't want to be the Bill Conlon. You look that up, everybody at home. But you don't.
I don't even know who that is. So
he's the Philly guy who had a little pedophilia late in his career. So
definitely don't want to be him.
Don't want to be him. But yeah, so.
Although I am glad we worked pedophilia into this intro, this 5-minute intro we're about to get to. So we're doing that once a month. And from our side, it actually is going to fit perfectly because we used to do news on this show. We used to end every episode with news. We cut that out about 8 weeks ago so we could extend these interviews because we're getting such great interviews. And by the way, the feedback on that's been amazing. People love what we're doing with that. But we thought once a month, why don't we give you a full news show?
Yeah.
So we're going to take one news topic just like we did today, and we're going to go around the horn and discuss it. Now, here's the caveat.
Yeah. Yes. Give us the caveat.
We recorded this on Wednesday. The topic being the presidential debate debacle that happened on Tuesday night. Am I getting that right? Was that Tuesday, Kaplan?
That was Tuesday, yes.
And it was Biden versus Trump. And we all know how that played out. So on Wednesday, we all, the four of us, got together and discussed the debacle. And I think we did a good job of not doing it in a partisan way. We just kind of dove into it, analyzed it of sorts, right? As much as we could. I mean, that's now coming out today, which feels dated already because Trump has coronavirus.
Yeah, I would have been a much nicer towards him if I knew he had coronavirus.
So there's nothing we could do about that. That's just kind of what happened. The news caught up to us and went past us. So feel free to give this a listen so you can get an idea of what they sound like, what we all sound like together. If you like them, which I think you will, go ahead and subscribe to their shows. We'll put the link to their shows in the description of this show. And just know this World's Smartest Podcast, we're going to be hitting you with once a month. And then on Monday of next week, we'll be back to our regularly scheduled program, Lost in America. Cap, am I forgetting anything, or should we get straight to the show?
It's our 200th episode coming this Monday.
200th episode.
But in the meantime, enjoy the show. We'll be back with this whole gang in a month. So,
all right. Enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Wow. What a debate. Well, should we start with the debate or should we start with us and what's going on here?
I think people, more than wanting to hear about the debate, they want to hear about America's sweethearts, us.
Yes.
So let's...
The new toughest gang in town.
That's right. That's right. We're the greasers of the digital world. And we're, you know what? I think we're all providing a valuable service between now and the end of the election and or our republic. Of giving pithy, independent analysis of it. And we're all kind of covering different things. Andrea, your show is real smart and funny. What do you do?
What's up? All right. So, yeah, let's fix the world between now and the end of it in a month. So I am Andrea. I'm the host of Ask a Political Scientist. It's a live streaming YouTube show/podcast that's every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern time, where we bring a political scientist and a practitioner together to talk about big problems like polarization and the media and racism and what makes people vote and stuff like that, partisanship. And we take live questions from the YouTube audience in real time. So whenever you're watching the news and shouting and screaming or screaming into the Twitter void, you can actually direct it to experts who will answer in real time.
Wait, so like normally when you're really mad at like AT&T or Verizon or something, you're like, God, I wish I didn't have this bot. I just want to scream at somebody. This is our chance to scream at the system itself if we want to.
That's right. Consider anything where you're just like, why is it like this? You can scream at us. And honestly, if you're having Verizon issues, you can scream at us about that too. It's very
cathartic. People don't know that political scientists are the whipping boys of the world, that you this are all true. You're all permitted to be. You will just absorb the anger.
That's
have you
right.
Have you had Morris Fiorina on?
I have not, though I had someone on my show last week deliver a sick burn against Morris Fiorina's work.
Ooh.
And I thought of
that. Them's fighting words. I'm a Fiorina acolyte. I love that guy.
It was a wild, I like him too. It's a wild insider dispute about how you measure polarization. So that's the kind of drama to break.
I'll be honest.
Was it Eric Grossman? Because I like him too, but he was like, oh man, no, Fiorina's off.
No, nope. They just said that Fiorina was boring.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
Real quick, what political scientist here, other than you, Andrea, is like super entertaining and not a dry, boring person in the back of an office with elbow patches?
You actually have to be boring to get into political science grad school. So,
well, that's kind of what I thought. The whole point of this network, though, which is World's Smartest Podcast Network. Welcome, everyone, to the network. Yeah. Turner Sparks here, host of Lost in America podcast. But the whole point of this network is that we had talked about this off air, that anyone, you get these political people or these science nerds, right? And then they are doing what they consider to be this like smart, hilarious podcast. And you listen to it. And frankly, the only thing it's good for is going to sleep at night, right? You can put it in and fall asleep. It's good for insomnia.
Have you guys seen the Washington Post's Department of Satire? Has anybody checked that out?
No.
It's all of us being funny people. Like, it's imagine super nerds who at some point watched like 2.5 Men and were like, I could do that. And then with zero training, tried to make a humor website within the Washington Post. And like everybody at the Washington Post is like, you're so clever.
And a lot of the jokes are this. They're like, so I heard you had an interesting night last night. And the guy goes, I went out to dinner with my wife and let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
And then everyone laughs.
Shenanigans gets used at some point.
I'm like, the joke is not, you can't say it's a joke and then bail on the joke before you've even told, like that doesn't, and then everyone nervously laughs because it's not that funny. But you think you're killing. So anyway, it's either that or it's these comedians who want to be political and end up just accidentally starting the Proud Boys.
Yes.
Well, you're arguing quite well these days. They got
a shout out the debate last night.
And they're not joining the network, though, correct? They're not.
They're not one of us. So we decided we're four people somewhere in the middle of all this.
We're not
so
proud.
Grouping together. We're less proud than they are. So anyway, Ira Kaplan and I are the Lost in America podcast. We bring on comedians. We take a global news story. So we rarely talk about America. These are world stories. The election, the stolen election in Belarus recently, the protests going on in Thailand, what Russians think of our elections, what Russians think of Trump. We find a comedian who's living in one of those places around the world, from one of those places around the world, and we go there and we talk to them on the ground about what's happening. What is the Belarusian revolution like when you live in Minsk? Okay, we'll go find Misha Kalin, the comedian who lives there and started the comedy scene there, and he tells us what it's like. And you end up getting much more of an unfiltered perspective. What we've found is that people will always tell us, like, oh, be careful when you talk to them. There's no free speech in that country, so they're not going to want to say much, which is true until you talk to a comedian, and they're like, who gives a shit? I'll say anything I want to say. And you get this insane, crazy insider story. So that's what we do every week. This week we have Oleg.
So you're basically like if The Economist were in the Comedy Cellar?
Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah,
we take
good.
Economist stories almost exclusively.
We punch up the jokes in The Economist stories.
We take stories in The Economist and we find comedians. And I think the real gauge of success for us will be how many of these comedians end up in prison in their own country.
We're taking bets on who will be the first country. We've done Lebanon. We've done Belarus. We've done Russia now. Yeah, we're Thailand.
Thailand, apparently you're not allowed to speak. You're not allowed to mention the king.
Tough. I was about to say Thailand. Like,
they have the famously the toughest anti-royalty, like whatever the world. You probably know the word for that.
Les Majeste laws.
I knew you knew the word.
So I
knew that going in, and we had this poor comedian on, and within like 2 seconds, I was saying the king left and right, and he was getting so uncomfortable on the Zoom.
Is he dead now? Is that what happened?
We haven't heard from him in a few weeks.
He has not promoted.
They also have really, really, really tough anti-defamation laws. Like some Australian that was working over there just got arrested and might go to prison for 2 years for giving a really bad TripAdvisor review. He compared, he's like, this hotel was horrible. They wouldn't let me bring my own bottle of liquor. It's modern day slavery. And they were like, we're taking you to prison. So be careful in Thailand, gang.
I gave a bad review once, but I didn't use my real name. So
you use Turner's name. So that he's screwed if he ever goes over there.
This is Turner's final podcast appearance.
Heaton, tell us about your show.
I host The Political Orphanage. Now, I realize for people on your respective shows, because we're all going to share these on our respective feeds. So for people that are listening that aren't a regular expert listener of my show, I get that we all love being super hardcore Republicans and Democrats now, and that everyone in America agrees that red team and blue team are awesome and the system's great. But there is a tiny sliver of us, myself included, that's like, you know what? I'm not really stoked to be on red team or blue team. And on top of that, I occupy this crazy psychological space where I enjoy having friendships with people I disagree with. And so I wanted to form a space for people like that, that didn't want to play rock'em sock'em robots with politics anymore. So I created the Political Orphanage, and I style it as a pithy podcast for problem solvers, as opposed to rank partisanship. So on Wednesdays, I talk to an author or a thought leader or a warlord or a mentat. Last week I had on PJ O'Rourke. The week before that, I had on a neuroscientist to talk about how neurochemicals affect people in politics. Turns out that serotonin is a really big factor on Twitter. Then on Fridays, I just bring on straight up comedians. We just kick around funny headlines. So Fridays, you will learn nothing. There will be nothing added of value to your life other than humor. Wednesdays will actually be pretty thinky. You'll sound smart at a cocktail party if they still existed in the COVID era. But you can really stock it up. So when we finally are able to see each other in person, if you listen to the Political Orphanage, you'll sound brilliant.
And until then, it's kind of like a cocktail party, right? You can drink heavily while listening and call that socializing, right?
Yeah, I won't tell anybody. Just, you know, just try not to drive while you're doing it.
So that's the world's smartest podcast network. Yes. That's
before you go to a cocktail party, you should listen to all of our shows. So then you will be the best blowhard, as we like to say in Lost America.
It's a mere three-hour reading list ahead of any cocktail party or social engagement.
Well, actually, I'll add to that I have got a bunch of guests on my program explicitly from you lot. So like Morris Fiorina, who I was bragging on earlier, because he is
Mo.
He,
we call him Mo now. Did you know that?
Oh, that's a man. I thought it was a woman.
I thought it was a woman too.
But Fiorina is such a womanly last name.
Agreed. That is my biggest concern.
Aren't Morris you all Fiorina's aware this is a post-gender society, though?
Yes, that's true.
His surname is horribly effeminate. That said, though, I'm a big fan of him, and I was introduced to him by Andrea, who I think even like let me put her name in the tagline of like Andrea sent me or something like that. And if anybody listens to my program likes Jeremy Kerrigan, who I was reminded of because you used the word blowhard, he's one of my favorite blowhards, and I got him specifically from Turner, who for like months was like, you should really talk to this dude. He's a playwright. He was a writer for Gary Johnson, and I was like, maybe. And then I invited him out. I'm like, oh yeah, he's fantastic. So yeah. Like,
we have him on Lost in America. Yeah. He did, what's his play on Broadway, Kaplan?
Lifespan of a Fact.
The Lifespan of a Fact. He wrote on Broadway. And we have him on a couple times, and I'm like, this is Heaton's best friend. They just haven't met yet.
have you talked to his buddy Joe? Have you had Joe on your podcast yet?
He told us about Joe, but we haven't had him on yet.
Joe is the official translator for Dennis Rodman when he's in North Korea. And like having spoken to him, it's not even that he speaks North Korean that well. It's that he can speak Dennis Rodman very well.
I was going to say, that vocabulary cannot overlap.
Yeah, Dennis Rodman's like, hey, give me the blue one. And he's like, I know what that means. He wants this thing. And like translates it.
Hot coin in Korean.
He wants a blue icy. Go get it.
But yes, anyway, we are now, I think, probably the world's smartest podcast network. We couldn't call ourselves that if it hadn't been verified by the Federal Podcasting Agency. So we have that. And the first thing that we've decided to tackle is we're going to tackle the presidential debate that elucidated the election before us last night, helped the many people on the fence come to a rational decision about who they wanted to vote for. Did everybody watch it? And if you watched it, did anybody remain sober by the end? And if so, I really want to talk to you about what your experience was like watching it.
The chagrin of my wife, I watched the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
After about 11 minutes, she went in the other room and was like, I'm done with this. I can't handle this. And I said, this is homework for a podcast I'm doing tomorrow. I watched it completely sober. It was a disaster.
I was sober as well. And I only, because I've become a lightweight and get a headache by even looking at alcohol. And I only watched it because of this podcast. And honestly, I think I would have as much to say if I had just read a couple of the Twitter reactions.
Well, it was so I had two scotches, which I think is acceptable for the amount of
I think you're required to have that going, right?
Two bottles glasses of Dewars.
Do you pour it neat or do you do the ice or what?
So I'm staying with my parents this week, and Dad has Dewars on hand.
Your dad's got a study, right? I can picture.
He's got a study. So
yeah, decanter. He's got a decanter of.
No, we don't. I think we do. We have a ceremonial decanter, but I think we put like we put tea in it or something. I don't think we even have liquor in it. I think it's just some like interesting thought piece.
More elitist, by the way, than an actual like decanter is a ceremonial decanter.
The reason that we did that was that when, as I understand it, like when they would invite, like, or not invite, when they would hire a workman or a plumber, they would notice that like the brandy in it would go down. And they were like, all right, we're not going to put real liquor in this anymore. Someone might rewire our house in a funny way and it'll catch fire or something. So they changed that. Anyway, my point is about 3/4 of the way through the debate, I was like, am I drunk or is this just truly horrible? Is this just an awful thing? And I'm hearing from you guys that is correct, that regardless of the respective sobriety, everybody was like, no, it was a train wreck.
Well, yeah. I was drunk, just so you know. I drank two big, I got like a headache. I'm like hungover right now. I haven't been drunk this much in a while. But yeah, it was the world's dumbest debate.
Mike makes you the embodiment of the United States at the moment after that.
I don't, you have to be drunk too, otherwise I would have turned it off, but I wanted to watch it. I had it for the pot. For this experience, I had to watch it. So I've battled through, but I don't know how anybody, to your point, would watch that sober.
Well, I also feel that if you watched 5 minutes, you understood exactly what happened for the remaining 600 hours that followed.
And when you're drunk, you enjoy a battle. So you enjoy the craziness of just like people tearing each other apart.
I was watching it and I was like, I kept reminding myself, how would this be entertaining if I didn't live in America or on Earth? And if that were the case, like if I were living on the moon, I think it would have been hilarious. It would have been great. Mm. And I suspect that like Vladimir Putin was probably hospitalized for an erection that wouldn't stop by the end of that. Like he probably had like a 3-hour erection and he's like just gasping for air from laughing so hard the whole time. It's probably great if you're not in America.
Well, Turner and Cap, can you talk to your contacts, your comedy spies, about what they thought of it? Because we'll ask great comedy in Belarus too.
Yeah, we'll ask Oleg Denisov, our guest from this past week. Can we start with strategy on this? Because I think that both of their strategies, I recognize from stand-up comedy, and I have enlisted both of those things at certain points to varying levels of success.
Okay.
And so I to start with Biden's strategy.
You do a lot of race baiting in your comedy.
Oh, God.
Mostly.
Have you heard his Proud Boys bit?
You just did his bit about the suburbs. How much
Forget what they said. What they said doesn't matter. This whole debate, had nothing to do with what they said. It was all their demeanor. And they also said nothing of importance at all throughout the whole thing. There was no details on any single plan at all. It was literally just, this was the whole debate. Biden went in saying, this is a stand-up move. You do this in stand-up comedy. This is how you deal with hecklers. One of the major strategies of dealing with a heckler in stand-up comedy is they heckle you. They heckle you. They heckle you. You don't respond. You stand in front of, say they're on the right side of the stage, right? You stand you put one foot out, so you're kind of facing 3/4 of the audience with them behind you. So you put them to your back, face the rest of the room, and address the rest of the room, acknowledging that that person is not in the group. Right. And you can do it physically verbally. You can be like, "Hey, who brought this guy? Eh? Who are you? Who's driving him home?" Like one of those things.
Yeah.
Or you can do it non-verbally. You can just look and smile and kind of like roll your eyes and laugh at, get everyone laughing at how ridiculous that person is. That's the exact move. I recognized it immediately. I was like, "Oh, someone got in that." I don't know if he has like Dave Chappelle or Jon Stewart on staff or you know who. It could be Joe Schaefer doing it for free. It could be anybody.
I mean, Al Franken calls him periodically.
Yeah, maybe it's Al Franken. And somebody said, pull this move. And when he started doing it, I thought it worked to a point. When it stopped working, that's when Biden was just looking straight at the camera and laughing at Trump, but not responding to Trump. And it would have worked much more effectively if he never responded to Trump. The problem is he got dug into it a couple times and he was like, "You're the worst president in the history of America."
Well, and the other problem is that normally you can normally I don't get heckling. I find to be pretty rare, but when heckling does happen, like 9 times out of 10, the heckler thinks they're assisting you. And you're just like, "Hey, dude, I've got it covered." And if they don't, you just kind of deal with them. And if they keep messing with you, you just like, "Where's the bouncer to get this jackass out of here?" But you can't do that when the jackass is the president and you have 3 uninterrupted hours of heckling. So I feel like that only worked to a point, and that it was like you can't punch him in the face.
And he didn't have a live audience that he could like rally to be like, yeah, what's going on with this dude, and kind of make fun of him. He just had Chris Wallace, who was really not a good audience member as far as stand-up comedy goes.
He's a terrible...
not someone I want in the front row at the Lansing Comedy
Club. Can I just say, I would completely favor Chris Wallace having a mute button that he could use. And if that doesn't seem okay, I am fine giving that man a starter pistol that he's allowed to fire into the air to try and like, and just wave the gun around going, shut up, just shut up, to try and like restore order to that ridiculous setup. Yeah, Turner, what is Trump's strategy, do you reckon?
So then Trump, I've also done this in stand-up, and this is not a good move, stand-up come. This is when you come in and you just bulldoze. Right. Hmm. And bulldozing works if you're the fifth one, comedy wise, if you're the fifth one on the lineup and the room's hot and they're laughing at anything. And that's when you come in hot and you're matching the audience's energy that's already there. But if you're walking into a dead room, which Trump is, this audience is told they're not allowed to react. They're not allowed to do anything.
Which is a shock that they pulled that off, right? I would have been amazing, like groaning in my face.
Why did they have an audience? It was totally tepid applause when they came in. Like it was when they came in, it was like, yeah. And I was like, that's the correct amount of applause. They finally nailed the correct level of happiness that America has watching these 2 minutes at the stage.
That's right.
Yeah. And then when you bulldoze a dead audience, it's like there's no acknowledgement of connection. What you have to do is you start out really soft. And then you build up, which is what you see in most debates, right? They don't get hot until like 45 minutes, an hour in.
Usually. They pretend to be civil for the first 30, 40 minutes.
Trump does not. He's not a normal politician. There's no...
That's when you come off like a lunatic, is when you just come. And I've done that before too. When I've gone into rooms that aren't hot and I come in screaming, going crazy, and the audience is like, who is this maniac? And then you're terrible. You bomb through the whole thing.
So if you use disproportionate power with a heckler, you lose the audience as well. If a heckler is like, hey, like I'm going to say this funny thing, and you're like, shut up, you moron. You will die alone. You will die alone and sad, and I hate you, and I will beat you with a tire. Like, the audience, you lose the audience when you do that. You've got
to
respond.
You say, that's your 20th response to the heckler. Right. After everything else. And then it's funny because we've all, and you're right, Turner, for speeches, for comedy, it's like you start tempered and then like you get more excited and the audience gets more excited with you. And then the screaming match is super powerful or super hilarious. And it was just insane. I mean, I just felt like I was watching a child. I know people have made this analogy, but it's just like, and the fact that he just basically wouldn't stop talking when it wasn't his term. I was just like, we are dealing with someone with like a 2-year-old with true behavioral issues. Like a good 2-year-old.
I think Trump is his personality type. I don't know that he's dumb. I think that there could be some really good raw material back there. But he's always struck me as like the guy at the back of the history class going like the Michelangelo statue's penis is showing. Like he's the guy just like trying to derail everything by shouting stuff, and was like very much in that mode during the debate.
Well, I think that he understands something that Biden, the regular politicians, Hillary Clinton definitely didn't understand. He understands it's a TV show.
Yeah.
So he understands what gets ratings. Everyone's talking about it if it's a train wreck. So he instinctively knows, like, I'm going to be like that. You were like, you, if he came in and did pleasantries, you'd be like, this is boring, and you turn it off.
Kaplan, I disagree. I mean, I see what you're saying, but even on TV, comedy is also a performance, right? Yeah. And you need to build. If you come in so hot, you get what Yaya did, what my wife did, what any of us, if we didn't have to do this podcast, would have done, is you just turn it off within 5 minutes. And everything I was seeing, at least on Twitter, that's what people were doing. They're like, I'm not watching this. And they just left and did something
else. I thought he was, the first 15 minutes, I was like, this is about, Trump's killing him. Like, I thought Trump was winning the debate.
No.
In the first 15 minutes, and then Biden, it got too much. That's why I think he.
I think Trump has a 3-pronged strategy that he employed in this debate. The first one was Turner's absolutely right. His base, his audience views him as a pro wrestler. Like he's in the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. They know that. They're looking forward to it. Nobody at this point is like, you know, Trump's, he's probably a really pleasant, like, no, everybody knows how he is. Everybody knows how he is personally. He's not going to alienate his audience doing that. And in fact, a lot of them are tuning in explicitly to watch the train wreck. But I think that there's two additional things he was doing throughout the debate. One was he just needed to make Biden stumble because there's now this whole framework in place of Biden is senile. that is a right wing talking point constantly. So anytime you can piss off Biden to the point where and I was watching this going, there's no way I could have done this. I would have kicked the podium off. Like, I just would have kicked the podium over and like shouted an obscenity and walked straight to a bar. I would have been able to last in there 20 minutes before I would have either been arrested for assaulting the president or I would have got to a bar. So like that was point number one, was just make him lose his cool. And I think the other point's actually more insidious. Trump knows he's not going to lose his audience by being a pro wrestler jackass, right? He also knows it's to his benefit to get people to turn off the TV. It's to his benefit to have people go, I hate this. This is so stupid. I hate both of these men. This election is awful. Our country's a waste. I don't even want to be a part of this. I'm going to go watch Netflix. I'm done with this. I'm not voting. Because those people were probably going to vote for Biden. Whereas his core is locked in. He doesn't have to worry about his core being turned off by his antics. So his antics only serve to suppress the people that might not vote for him.
As much as I like to think Trump is just a flailing idiot, Heaton, I think you're right about all of those things. I think it does like discourage people who aren't that animated about Biden. But I will say the one thought I had about Biden and what they were trying to get him to do is that the right has pushed so hard to make Biden seem senile and he can't hold a thought together. And I think that they set the bar so low
that
Biden looked pretty good. And I saw Trump kind of jab at him like once Biden said, number one, blah, blah, blah. And then Trump interrupted him. And then Biden went back and said, number three. And Trump was like, you were on two, and tried to call out that like senility. But that was one, very desperate. Three, totally didn't land and didn't do much for the actual conversation. Like, I think his whole plan to set Biden up as like mentally unwell or unfit didn't work.
Yeah, no, that's I think you're right. Both right. I think he tries to get them both. He wants to take Biden in the mud with him and then make people just mad about the whole process and say, oh, both people. You get the headline that they're both sending names. But he also they set the bar. So they had Giuliani on Fox News yesterday saying that he's all these doctors say he has dementia. You know, he got the Fox and then you see him. He speaks. He's an open guy, Biden.
Saying Biden has dementia or Trump?
There's all the Fox News talking point, the right wing talking point was that Biden has dementia and he's senile. And I see it. I see it on Facebook with friends of mine who are Trumpers and they're posting all these things about how he's so senile. And then he comes in the debate and he's pretty good overall. You know, he had a few moments.
What about the other side of this? I mean, the exact opposite of what you were saying, Heaton. What about if Biden's obviously like we know polls don't matter, right? It's really hard to trust polls.
Polls mostly like Andrea might dispute this. I think polls mostly exist to employ pollsters. I think they're basically make work programs at this point. I don't believe in polls anymore. I do believe in gambling, but I don't believe in polls.
So do you believe in the betting on elections?
Yes, I do. In fact, that's what I go to is I go explicitly to betting. And then after betting, I look at where hedge fund managers are putting their money. Yep. And then after that, I check polls. But polls are third on the list for me.
That's right. That's good.
Why is that the case, Andrea?
So polls are fine, but they have a huge margin of error. And I think it's actually a lot bigger than is shown. So there's like the statistical margin of error, but then there's the broader margin of error that comes with sampling from, say, a not completely random and representative population that's kind of picked up in margin of error, but not really. And there's a lot of what we call selection bias, which is the people who answer polling calls or emails and things like that are a very small percentage of the people that's willing to talk to a stranger and willing to share something honest. And so they're just really, really noisy measures. And to Heaton's point about the betting markets and what hedge fund managers are doing, it's very easy for us to say what we're going to do and have that not be what we're going to do.
Yeah, it's when you poll people and you're like, who's going to win? And you're like, man, Bernie Sanders is going to take it. I believe in him 100%.
Yeah.
You're like, you want to bet $50 on that? No, I'll bet $25 on Biden. I think.
Yeah.
But right now the gambling set still has Biden as the favorite.
Yeah, he actually improved after the debate. He proved to minus 150.
And I think the Biden strategy is this. He is the Benadryl candidate. He's the candidate where it's like, hey, are you just sick of this?
I love some Benadryl right now.
I am a half pint of Benadryl for America. Yeah. And like, by the way, I'm on team Benadryl. I would love to tone this all down so that politics can go back to nerds and everybody else can go to Netflix.
Remember when we used to not be obsessed with it every single waking moment of our lives, even those of us who spend a lot of time thinking about it?
Yeah.
Well, so does that mean then if no one watches, if people turn that off after 5 minutes last night or 10 minutes and then... I mean, I can almost guarantee you that the ratings for the next one and the third one are going to be tiny compared to the first 5 minutes of this one, right?
Yeah, probably.
Because of what happened last night. People are like, why would I watch that again? So can't you argue then that if Biden's in the lead right now with the betting, then this favors who's ever in the lead because people are not going to be making their decisions off of the second and the third because they're not even going to watch the second and the third?
Mm. I don't think that I don't know. I me not being a political scientist, I have a very difficult time envisioning anyone in America that's on the fence at this point. Yeah. Like we've got the guy that was the VP from the last regime for 8 years. We have a pretty good idea of what that regime looked like. We've got the current angry Muppet that is leading this regime. We know what he's about. We know what the old regime's about. Like I don't know. Like remember the third debate last time, there was that guy with the mustache and the sweater where like Hillary and Trump were just fighting. And then he came up
on Twitter last night. What was his name?
Ken Bone.
Ken Bone. And he was just real smiley. And he's like, I'd really like to know what you're going to do about oil tariffs or something like that. Yeah. Like no one in America is like that at this point where someone's like, you know, we've got two good candidates. It's just a question of what the tiebreaker is between these wonderful people that embody our nation's ideals. Right. And really for me, it's probably going to come down to pensions for unions with the fire department. Like, no one's doing, at least I don't think so. Andrea, is there like a group of dimwits that are just like waiting to see how many Trump signs are in the yard on the way to their polling station or vice versa? They're just going to vote based on that?
Yeah, basically not. So the big story in political science, even before this shit show, to quote CNN, is that debates don't really do much anyway, and undecided voters are overcounted. And again, it goes back to polling, where it's really just noise around people being undecided or not answering and things like that, as opposed to true undecided people. Or people who look like, if it looks like people are changing their minds, like, oh, now Biden's ahead, now Trump's ahead, so we must have undecided people. That's just also noise. And they've done some cool studies to show that. And then the other piece is, so very few undecided voters. Then the other piece is that debates just don't really seem to change people's minds in a big way. There are some exceptions. So one of the things I was thinking about last night is political scientists got very excited when we started seeing televised debates in the first place, because that was the first time you saw candidates up close. And the story there is that some political scientists say that that made politics overall more emotional, because you could see facial expressions up close. People could be more nuanced in their feelings. And from there, we see American politics become much more of an emotional exercise in the decades since TV. So debates matter, but in a very long term.
Man. I am a quarter Vulcan on my dad's side, and I think everything's way too emotional. I want everybody to calm the hell down.
You gotta go back to radio and then. This is
what I would do. So like we're about to like this was the first question for the debate was like, what are we going to do about Amy Barrett and the Supreme Court thing? I think all inquests that Congress does, all hearings Congress does, the public absolutely has a right to a transcript. And that should be it. Or conversely, I would be happy to have people on camera that are the ones being interviewed, but you're not allowed to see the people asking the question. You can't see the senators. Mm. It just gives you a card that says what a senator said, because then they'd all shut the hell up and do their jobs. I think there's so much grandstanding in it. There's so much emotion that is going to drive donors to my thing and just feeling self-righteous and angry. Like, I hate all of it. And like at this point, watching this horrible train wreck of a debate that is the twilight of American democracy. Like, I wish that like Chris Wallace just sent hand-drawn postcards to both candidates and been like, check yes or no on these boxes. Well, and we'll just all compare that.
So what would you guys do if you were Chris Wallace? Like, what's a better way to handle this? Yeah. If you're the one, whatever, running the debate.
I would have left. I would have left about halfway through.
I mean, I think he shouldn't. He tried to do the thing where he asked them a lot of these questions were like, how will voters know the difference of he tried to treat them like normal, like a normal election. You know, that was another mistake. Mm. Like asking Trump, why is your policy on X different than your opponent's? He never answers that. So I think how do you get around that?
This is what I would have done if I'd been Chris Wallace. I would have been like, guys, gentlemen, please get him to stop for a second. I would have been like, the three of us met for drinks before this, and we said that Trump, you were going to do this and Biden was going to do that. And we had the whole Kabuki thing worked out, and you were throwing this off. Now, don't like we would like just make him look like he's also part of the establishment.
Yeah,
I think that's right. What Romney should have done. Wait, you remember when Romney tried to derail Trump in 2016 and he came out and he's like, I'm not running for president, but don't vote for this guy. Yeah. Remember that moment? It did nothing.
Yeah.
All it did was make all the anti-establishment people go, oh, Romney doesn't like him. I love him. Romney should have come out and been like, guys, listen. I'm also an old rich white guy. I've hung out with this man socially. Don't worry about it. I'm telling you, you don't need to worry about Trump because it's all an act. You don't need to worry about him. He's one of us. He's one of us rich white establishment dudes. This is just don't worry. It's all bluster. And that would have taken the wind out of his sails. So I would have done that as Chris Wallace.
Mm. Yeah.
I think the issue, Andrea, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I think the issue is It was the format of the debate was just so bizarre. Like, it was 2 minutes each to speak and then 11 minutes of just free talk.
Yeah.
You know, like, it needed to be way more structured. Can we do 2 minutes, 2 minutes, and then you get a 30-second rebuttal, 30-second rebuttal, and then, and even if you're doing a lot of like, man, your time is up, your time is up, at least that's better than just this like willy-nilly say what you want, no rules, go where you want. Of course, it's going to degenerate pretty quickly into these guys just being complete morons.
Well, and if you can't have someone keep the time, why people talked about a mute button, but why not just program the microphone so that they turn off when your 2 minutes are up, and then you're just like, okay, now we're moving on. The other thing that I thought they tried to do was he kept being like, okay, this is the end of this segment, we're moving on. And so we would bring up an issue with Supreme Court, healthcare, whatever. And then they would kind of yell about it in a free for all. And then he'd say, well, that's the end of the segment and move on. I would have preferred to see three segments that were actually about something as opposed to screaming about 20 headlines.
One of my listeners, and I can't remember the name, I apologize if you're listening, but emailed me a couple of years ago with a great suggestion, which was, what if we had, rather than a live debate, we just had a list of questions and like, you get 2 minutes, you can record it and send it in the statement however you want, and then the other guy gets 45 seconds to respond. And we're just going to go back and forth like that, and you get to think about it. You get to write out the response, which they're doing beforehand anyway. Like, both of the candidates, particularly Biden this time around, Biden had a bunch of like zingers that somebody told him. And you could just see like, oh man, they'd given him a note card with some jokes on it.
Comedians
have to make money in the pandemic, all right?
Trump's clear zinger was when he was like, I've been in 47 months. Yep, I've done more than you did in 47 years. I'm like, oh, somebody wrote that for him last night.
Yep.
And Biden had that line about the suburbs that he was just waiting to get out. It's like, you wouldn't know the suburbs unless you made a wrong turn, which didn't really make
sense. I like how you, like, the way you prove you're a tough guy is that you're from the suburbs.
I grew up on a cul-de-sac with a briefcase and a dream.
And then he was also like, your kind doesn't like me, a little old Roman Catholic. It's like, what? Yeah. Is that your like my poor race of Roman
working
Catholic?
Class? Oh, no,
that's a smart move on Biden's part, because Biden needs to
Pennsylvania.
Biden needs Pennsylvania. Biden also needs to not piss off religious people. And there's a chance that the Democrats are going to overplay their hand with the incoming Amy Barrett, because Amy Barrett's a lady. She's probably not groped any other ladies. So that's not going to be a tactic there. However, she's pro-life. She's a religious Christian. So like, if the onslaught is, look at this theocrat, she's horrible, that's going to turn off the evangelicals, the religious people. So Biden's like, hey, I too am religious.
You know what turns off an evangelical? A Roman Catholic.
Yeah, that might be worse.
Yeah, but
than
the entire
atheist.
Court like, is Roman Catholic.
Famously at war,
Kaplan would be more accepted than the Catholics.
Yeah. No, for some reason, there's no evangelical Supreme
He's
Court
Jewish,
justices.
It's all Catholics.
All
and Jews.
Catholics and Jews, the entire court, and none of your wasps either, Turner. I don't know.
Oh, come on.
But
I'd support Turner in the Supreme Court.
So can I? This is where my mind kept coming back to last night before it descended into a cloud of whiskey. I read a book that really informed me when I was in college. It's called Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Postman. Andrea, have you read that? You're familiar with it? So the central thesis to Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Postman, he's writing in, I think, like 1982. So TV is entering the period, like the first period of American history where we think TV makes us stupid. Because in the 50s, no one was really thinking about it.
We all collectively agree it makes us brilliant. So
Exactly. Yeah. But he's like, because in like 1982, everybody's writing these think pieces about sitcoms are rotting our brains. And Postman writes this fascinating book where he's like, no, sitcoms don't make you stupid. People understand that sitcoms aren't real. They're watching it for amusement. It's a pastime. They do it when they're in a hotel. And he goes, here's what we need to be on the lookout for. This isn't 82. He goes, we need to be on the lookout for this. If we ever got to the point where we started combining news and politics with entertainment, that would be the death of the Republic. Because if we ever blunder into such a world, we will train everyone in America to think it's not worth paying attention to this policy or candidate unless they're entertaining. And I think we saw the full flowering of that night.
Shut down our network now? Because I'm pretty sure that's what we're doing. This entire exercise.
We're bringing down the Republic here.
Oh my God. Did I just? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Afterwards, everybody read some math as a kind of indulgence or something. I'll put it this way. I think that we might actually be more substantive than that debate was. I think our ratio is still better. Yeah.
We were more substantive when we had the first three sentences that were actually strung together. And I don't think we've screamed out loud at anyone else on this yet.
No.
Was there any Was there any details given of any plan by either side during that whole thing? I remember there's one specific question I want to say that Chris Wallace had for Biden, I think. And it was, he pressed him on maybe his healthcare plan. Or no, he was talking to Trump about his healthcare plan, which never gave details on, right? And Biden kept saying, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. And Trump said, it does. It does. But no one ever got to a detail. And then there was the opposite where they went up. He was pressing Biden on the details of some plan it was one of the rare moments where Trump actually shut up for like at least a minute and a half of the 2 minutes.
Right.
And Biden rambled on, but never got to any details. But I'm forgetting what the plan was. So this is probably
a bad thing. Was this the Medicaid one? It was very early on where he was like, Obamacare doesn't mandate it, and Medicaid is in some states, and some states can choose not to cover.
It just feels like all the.
But he didn't get to what his plan would be. Right.
Because we don't want plans. Right. People, we're so at a low bar right now. We just want like someone who sounds competent. We have coronavirus. We don't have time for plans, basically. That's what we're getting at.
There's really no taxes. The closest to policy was, especially near the end, was like, just shout out loud if you are pro this or against this. Like, say you're against white supremacy. Say you're a law and order president. Like, we were literally just trying to get them to say things.
Yeah.
And then whether or not they repeated that back like a parrot was whether or not they stood for that thing. And
I'm gonna say a series of buzzwords and you may respond however you'd like for the social media clips.
Like, this is how we train gorillas to use the alphabet, like with little shapes. Like, that's basically where we ended.
Well, that's why I thought the one policy thing Biden actually got in was he said that his budget would include more money for police officers than Trump's. You know, that was an example of like, and Trump just kept yelling, you won't say law and order, you won't say law and order. And then Biden had that. So that, I thought that was a good moment for him, but
I'm remembering now what it was. It was the deal. The Biden, Trump was saying, you support the Green New Deal. Oh. He's like, I do not support the Green New Deal. Okay, well, what's your plan? And he goes, I have a plan. The Biden plan. But he wasn't saying what the Biden plan was. Like, I could be like, it's the Turner Sparks plan.
Right.
I am the Democratic Party. But yeah, he did a lot of that.
That was great when he said that. He's like, the Democratic Party supports it. He goes, I am the Democratic Party. It's like, wow, we really.
Like, hang on a second. Do you think about when Trump, I think he did it twice. He said, oh, well, if you're not going to say this, then you've lost the radical left. So he said that after the Green New
Deal.
He was
really trying to egg him on.
I think about the law and order. Yeah. And it's like, I don't know that. I mean, the radical left is something that he has inflated quite a bit. But I mean, is there a reality to that? Because there are people, obviously, very left of Biden.
Radical left already hates Biden, don't they?
They'll come around against Trump. Yeah, I think, I mean, this is a pretty standard tactic, right? Is that all Republicans are evil, bigoted, stupid, racist, and all Democrats are screaming socialist, left-wing, crazy people, right? Yep. Yeah. So, and this goes way back. Like remember when Al Gore was running with Joe Lieberman? Joe Lieberman, who's more Republican than anybody on this panel.
Is he alive? Did he die?
Yep. He alive, he just endorsed Susan Collins for her re-election in Maine.
Huge.
And he wound up...
That'll swing the election.
That'll
do it. He was Infinity in 1999. Okay, anyway. Yeah.
But you remember, like he was running as Al Gore, and at the time, there were pamphlets about how Lieberman was a socialist and stuff, and it really, it's not the case. That's part of the I think the two main talking points that are coming out of, or I'd say like the three main talking points coming out of the GOP are, one, Biden is senile. Two, the Democrats are lawless and will result in, you know, broken windows, flaming cars, et cetera, et cetera. And three, Biden is in the grip of the radical left, which I think they kind of have to do, because Biden is a pretty good example of someone who's been consistently center left his entire career, whatever. And frequently, I think Biden's a policy train wreck. You look back at his record, he's horrible at most of the stuff he votes on. But if you go back to the period he's voting on it, he's occupying whatever the center left position was of that particular time.
Right.
I think what they were really hoping, Trump and the team, was that Biden for his VP choice would pick AOC.
Yeah.
Right? Or someone like
so
that.
Badly. Elizabeth Warren or something.
He really, he needed a Warren, he needed AOC or someone as, you know, out there. And then that way, all these things would ring true that he's in the pocket of the radical left. But he picked Kamala, and she's like not that. She's basically a cop. Yeah.
She's just straight up ambitious. Well, she's the ambition wing of the Democratic Party.
Which we all know is unacceptable for a female politician, but okay.
And so then now they're just trying to fit a square peg into a round hole by being like, well, whatever. He's, even though he picked Kamala, he's still in the pocket of the radical left with no, it doesn't tie together as nicely as they were hoping.
Well, so a long time ago on my show, I had someone named Seth Maskett, who just finished a book about the Democratic Party since 2016, and it's called Learning from Loss or Learning from Failure. And basically it's like, what do they do in the 4 years to recover from this? And basically the big tension is exactly what Turner's describing, which is, do we appeal to the moderate Democrats or do we appeal to the far left and hope that the moderate, because you hope that the other side is going to go for them. And so even, you know, earlier this summer, it wasn't necessarily a foregone conclusion that they were going to go moderate center. This guy seemed to think that they would, and they have, but they've also made the deliberate choice not to include a running mate that is far left. And I think that was, I mean, that's something of a gamble, but they're being quite deliberate about it.
What do you guys think? Do you think that was a good move or not? I mean, to try to win.
I think it was a good move because I know people, like I actually do know people who have like voted for Trump who are going to vote for Biden, and none of them would have voted for Biden if his running mate was Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders or something like that.
Totally.
And I don't know. People say the young people won't vote, and I almost want to be like, well, then we deserve Trump.
Young people don't vote.
If they're really not going to vote because of he's not liberal enough, Biden, then we almost deserve Trump. It's what I don't know.
Agreed. I know people like that, by the way, who claim they're now not voting for Biden because Bernie lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like
really.
Yeah. The Bernie bro types are still out there. But ultimately, the whole reason why Bernie lost in the first place is because those exact people didn't vote.
Yeah, he didn't win the South Carolina.
So your voice doesn't matter if you're not showing up to vote. I mean, frankly.
Well, and Trump had that line last night where he was like, well, you know, you almost lost to Bernie Sanders. And he was like, but I didn't. Yeah. It wasn't
even
close.
He's like, Pocahontas would have dropped out 2 days early, trying to jam in a tweet.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah.
Any Pocahontas reference still gets me chuckled.
He would have loved her to be the VP. He would have been so much more entertaining.
I think that you're right. I think the gamble is like, so we're not going to appease the far left or the Bernie people or anyone left of that. We're not necessarily going to appease the people in the middle if we go too far left. But basically the gamble is who's more likely to turn out? Who do we want to convert? And I think you're exactly right. It's the Republicans/centrist people who are focused on the economy, because you will never get them to vote for a Bernie Sanders or anyone left of Biden. Yeah. And they basically made the guess that that group is bigger and more influential than the far left, who will still manage to not vote for Biden because it's a vote for
the man.
And I want to throw in here, because this is the world's smartest podcast network. Yeah. And I know what audience we're talking. I don't know if I would say this normally, but I know what audience we're talking to. These are our people. I was speaking to our financial advisor yesterday.
Ooh, okay, here we go.
And
the
he said,
"Smartest and richest podcast."
He said it doesn't. Oh, we have the deepest pockets in podcasting. Our listeners.
Yeah, that's right. I'm on the floor right now. Have I made that clear?
Our listenership, not us. I'm saying our base.
You were taking the Patreon money.
Anyway, he was saying that currently the market doesn't care one way or the other if Trump wins or Biden wins. He doesn't see that effect. Where obviously that would not have been the case if it would have been Bernie or I don't know.
You guys get 401ks at the comedy cellar or the clubs? Is that how?
We got a big,
We write the letter K on a drink ticket and then we put it in our mattress. That's what
I have lottery tickets. Does that count, Mike? If the multiverse theory is correct, I should be great. I think there's something to that. I mean, there's a political scientist, Rachel Kofer, I think, I can't remember her surname, that has basically posited something similar to what Andrea was saying, that the old game in the 90s was, go to the right or go to the left during the primaries, and then run to the center to get the majority vote. And her theory is that is now ended, that no longer exists. And the name of the game is just motivate your base to come out. That might be the case. I'll say anecdotally, I think that I know the circles I swim in. I know a lot of never Trumpers, and I know a lot of Republicans that wouldn't identify as such. But when you get a drink in them, they're like, I don't like Biden at all, but at least he believes in the system that I believe in. Like he at least like he agrees to the rules that I agree to. And I think I don't like him. But that other guy and those folks, I think, would not have voted for a Biden Bernie ticket or a Biden Warren ticket. But they might go over with Kamala Harris. And then the other thing, too, to harken back to one of my favorite political scientists, Morris Fiorina.
Mo is like back. All right, let's go.
Should Morris Fiorina be the
part of this network?
Or he could be at least the mascot or something.
Yeah,
Morris
like that. Yeah.
Fiorina fan club.
We can have a monthly mascot or something. I like that. He falls into this. He complements a group called Stronger Together Initiative or something like that. But there was a, it wasn't Pew, but it was kind of similar to Pew that came out 2 years ago that did polling. And they basically said, there's not, it's not that there's left and right, even if you want to put it on a spectrum, that the far right and the far left basically occupy between them 30% of the electorate. 70% of the electorate falls into the category of the exhausted majority, of right. which I am a very strident member.
Yeah.
And that includes traditional conservatives. It includes center-left liberals. It includes actual independents, which are probably about, you know, 10% of the electorate that really aren't like, you know, I'm basically a Republican or I'm basically a Democrat. And if that is correct, if there is, in fact, a 70% exhausted majority, then it wouldn't be about just motivating the base. It would also be about figuring out how to actually get that group to come out and vote.
Right. Well, and to keep going on the Morris Fiorinet fan club, one of the coolest things that he came out with is something called party sorting, is to say that it used to be the case that we had two parties, but you would see, exactly as Heaton was describing, you would see some liberal Republicans, and some conservative Democrats. Remember even more recently, like the Blue Dog Democrats?
Yeah. Which like I worked for.
Used to have a pro-life Democratic governor in Pennsylvania, Casey. I mean,
So there just used to be a lot more cross-cutting issues, and so you would see two candidates or two people would get together and they'd say, well, at least we agree on 50% of these things. And instead, what he argues is that we've sorted. And so there's just no conservative Democrats and no liberal Republicans. So we have nothing to say to each other. Mm. And that's part of why it's so miserable.
Which is really delightful for anybody that's not a hardcore conservative or hardcore progressive. Because whenever you talk to the hardcore people, they go, you're not as strident and angry as I am. You must secretly be a Nazi or secretly be a commie. And I'm going to put you on social probation for 4 years.
Yeah.
Which is why, again, I hope we move out of this current rut. Mm.
Well, one of the other things I learned last week on my show with someone named Neil Malhotra, who's the one who said that Mo's work was boring, is that we all think that, that we all think we're more moderate than we really are. Like most of us, some people will identify on the far, whatever extreme, but most of us are like, yeah, I'm pretty center of mass and everyone else is more extreme relative to me. It's a very geocentric view of ourselves.
I guess that makes sense because we all probably, like, if you were to ask everybody, like, would you say you're generally rational? Like, everybody's going to be like, well, of course I'm rational. All these other dingbats are, like, voting out of emotion, but I am purely, you know, logical.
Yeah,
and even as he said that, I was like, right, everyone except for me thinks that. And
well, it's normal. You think you are the center. You're the center of the universe. We're all narcissists, so, like, I'm the center. And anybody to the left of me, right to me. That's how I judge it, so.
Maybe this should have been the Center of the Universe podcast.
I had on, Andrea, have you had Mike Kaplan on your as your resident comedian on your show yet?
I have. Not Mike Kaplan.
I'm sorry. Yeah, there's another MYQ rival. Kaplan is another.
He's an enemy of the pod. Real enemy.
Oh, is he an enemy of the pod?
Now an enemy of the network.
Yeah, you can't. If there's another Turner Sparks out there, they will be an enemy of the pod as well.
I was going to say he was just off camera one time. He was telling me a joke. He's Jewish, and he was saying that that he finds that when he meets somebody else that's Jewish and they're like, they're very Jewish, he's like, whoa, you're crazy. But when he meets somebody less Jewish than him, he's like, what are you even doing? Like,
yeah, when he stole your bit.
I've been doing that forever. Listen to the podcast. Listen to Lost in America.
Well, it was off camera. Off. He might have attributed to it.
He doesn't
rip
me off in his act. He rips me off camera. That's typical.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And he rips me off story. By living his life.
He references your kids a lot, Mike. Yeah. It's very strange.
It was very good. One time on my my Zoom comedy show I do on Friday nights, we had that guy on the podcast. We shall not say his name, you know? Yeah. It's like how you can't say the king's name in Thailand. We can't say his name. So anyway, he was on our show and Kaplan's sister and mom were watching the show.
Oh, Mike.
And it was very confusing when we said, up next we have Mike Kaplan, and they were like, oh wow, here we go. And then it was this other guy.
We're very disappointed. Yeah. And then my mom adopted him. She starts sending him checks instead because he returns her phone.
You know what? I had that with a Mrs. Heaton in Ohio once, because there aren't that, like, there's like eight, maybe eight or nine Andrew Heatons in Britain.
Because
Andrew Heaton's not that uncommon of a name. So when I was in the UK, I thought about tracking down and fighting every Andrew Heaton, just like showing up and ringing the door and be like, all right, one of us has got to lose here. But but in America, there's like maybe five of us. One of them's in Ohio, and his mom used to email me by mistake. And I would be like, hey, Mrs. Heaton, this is different Andrew Heaton. This is Andrew Heaton from Oklahoma. You're looking for your son. And she was really nice. She's like, well, if you're ever in town, like, you know, you can get cookies with me. And I was like, this is cool. I like that I've got like basically cousin status by virtue of a name. Same thing.
I mean, but that's also how old women in Ohio get murdered, is they tell internet strangers who have the same name as their son to come over.
People don't know that it's the leading cause of death with women over 20 in Ohio.
Yeah, COVID actually is only second to that among that demographic.
It's like when Trump is they love me in Ohio because he brought back football. So that's you. They love you there.
So, I think we're going to have to close up here in a second. Andrea, do you have time to do a conclusion? I think a couple of the things that the Twitterverse is alive with today is the would you tell your followers to stand down from violence question? Basically, like,
we would.
Kind of the huh?
Boston America followers would not tell. We would not tell them.
There was the, you know, will you commit to a peaceful transition of power is a really big one. And then the other one was sort of kind of the sort of the rehashing of the, you know, fine people on both sides statement of Proud Boys and that kind of thing. So do you all think that is going to have any impact beyond the pundits discussing it?
No, I think absolutely not. I think that if you didn't know that that's who Trump was before last night, then like, what have you been doing for the last four? If last night was your first discovery that Trump won't denounce white supremacists, like what earth, what planet are you living on?
Yeah. And I like
that everyone went into last night, either knowing that and hating him for it or knowing it and rationalizing it because they like the fact that he keeps the stock market going or whatever it might be. Right.
Right.
So I don't think that made a big, I mean, if that was shocking to you, then you're the you're insane. I don't think that was shocking.
What I found odd about that, to go back to your original point, Turner, of comedy and approaching things as a comedian, I have found that if I'm doing a show or I'm doing a podcast and it's funny, and then about an hour in, I'm like, but seriously, I'm going to get vulnerable. I'm going to open up with you for a minute. I'm taking the comedy mask off. This is just me. It has incredible impact. Like if I'm, and I'm, you know, you have to do it for real. You can't do it as a bit, but if you're doing it for real, people are like, oh, wow. Whoa. He's okay. Like we're stopping the car. Right. And I've seen Trump do that twice over the last 5 years. He did it once when Ted Cruz won Iowa, where he walked on the stage back during the primaries. And he went, I want to congratulate Ted Cruz. He worked really hard. I want to give a lot of credit to his campaign. I know that they've been working hard. They should be really proud of what they can. Yeah. And this is back before the primaries were over in 2016. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that must be the real Trump. The other thing must be an act.
Right.
But then it consistently goes back to the performance thing. And then here recently when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, he had a very human reaction to her dying, mm-hmm. where assuming that that was, in fact, the first time he knew about it was on the tarmac leaving a plane. He looked genuinely shocked and sad and went, oh, I'm very sad to hear that. She was a great person. And whether you agreed with her or not, she was a titan in American politics. And it's very sad. And I was like, if he did that more frequently, I could begin to go, maybe the other stuff is bullshit.
No, but yeah,
maybe it's all just a weird Kaufman-esque act. And I think that the debate would have been a good opportunity to do that, particularly three quarters in. If he'd taken a deep breath and been like, I want very clearly to make this known that I am going to uphold the Constitution and I believe in our country. And, you know, I think it would have had great emotional impact, but instead he kind of demurred and stepped aside it, where the line was, Wallace says, you know, will you denounce white supremacy? And he goes, sure. Like, which groups? Sure. And he's like, Proud Boys. And he's like, I'd tell them to stand aside and stand by or something like that. And I was like, okay, kind of. It sort of had the, like, yes, technically sort of, but you could have just been like, yes, it's like violence and racism are really, really bad. And we're all very much in favor of that. But he didn't quite want to do that.
Yeah. Well, and I think the bar is so low that what you're saying is just being basically human for a second is very impactful.
Yeah, right.
And that you're right, that that's absolutely where he is. And I think you're right, too, that saying, oh, like what Turner was saying, like, oh, I support white supremacists, blah, 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 is not news. I saw a lot of people on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else say, oh, my God, why aren't we freaking out that he said this? And it really isn't news and it shouldn't be news. And it shouldn't change anyone's view about Trump, because if you're shocked, then I don't know where you've been. But one concern I do have is that he, you know, the Proud Boys apparently were very excited that he said this. And I actually worry that we will see a shooting, like, in the short term. Separate from the election, like you're encouraging people to take up arms, and that's concerning to me.
Well, the thing is, Trump is not like, you know how there's some comedic actors who can then turn in a dramatic performance, and you're like, oh wow, Adam Sandler's really good in that in Uncut Gems. Yeah. Trump is he's a comic to his core. He cannot. Chris Wallace tries to give him the opening.
All of comedy is offended.
Well, Chris Wallace tries to give him this opening to just like say I'm gonna accept the election, and it's like I knew this is a terrible idea. He's not gonna. Encourage his people. He's never going to take that, as you said, to be human. He never, and he could benefit from. There's been so many examples, too many to count over the last 4 years of when he could have if he just was like, the bar's so low that if he just acted like a human being for 2 seconds, it would benefit him, but he just can't. It's not who he is. He's authentic, you know, that way.
What would be amazing is if he loses this election or at the end of the next 4 years, when he is leaving office, he ascends the podium and goes, "Fooled you."
Yeah.
Like, it's like the greatest bit of performance art in all of human history. I did it. I don't believe any of this. I was a reform candidate. I don't care. Gotcha. And then, like, and I'd be like, I some part of me has to acknowledge that was a pretty intense joke. Like, that was good, man. That was a really good, like, prank.
Complex sentences and everything else. No, at the end of the debate last night, I was like, you know what? I was talking to my boyfriend. We watched it together. And I was like, it doesn't seem like he has a vision for this country. And then it was like, yeah, that's the whole point. And what,
yeah, you didn't know,
I don't know what
now.
I thought. Yeah. I'm like, how could I even think to say that? But Heaton, if you are right and he just takes off the mask, then this is a long game and there is a deep vision for the country and he's playing it in the smartest way possible. We should get him on the network.
I would love to, like,
get him on the network.
Get him on the network.
I think I've mentioned before what I would tell him if I was able to meet him in person. About 2 years ago, a friend of mine that works at the White House got me a West Wing tour, which is difficult. You can get an East Wing tour pretty easy through your congressman. West Wing tour is more difficult. And
East
I ended,
Wing's for jokers.
I literally ended up skipping it because I was going to go play Risk with my friends over at Reason, and it's hard to coordinate all of our schedules. And I was
That's
like,
the most
I've been
Andrew
at the
Heaton sentence I've ever heard.
How do libertarians play a game about world domination? They don't believe in any.
It's all mercenaries.
They're all isolationists.
You just spread around the board.
All you're doing is paying mercenaries to destroy tariffs.
Okay.
It's nothing. It's just armed free trade with no armies the whole time. But at the time though, I was like, if because when I was a kid, I went to the West Wing because we got a tour and like we ran into Bill Clinton. We saw him there. And so it's conceivable that can happen. And I was like, if I met Trump, what would I say? And I was like, I think what I would say is like, wow, you know, what an honor to meet the sitting president while in the White House. This is amazing. Your socks are fine. They're fine. And then if he was like, what are you talking about? I'd be like, oh, people think you have boring socks. I think you should wear boring socks because you're the president. And then all I want to know is because either A, he'd be like, my socks are awesome. And then the next time you'd see him, he'd have like lederhosen on or something. And like you could like, or alternately, he would like lean forward and be like, I know what you're doing. And then you'd be like, oh, shit, he actually is on top of this. Like, this is, I don't know. I have no way to do a litmus test personally until I meet him and tell him about his socks.
In political science, we call that a separating equilibrium.
The socks thing?
Yeah.
Is it always socks?
It doesn't have to be socks. It could be anything. Oh. Anytime you saying one thing helps you decide what type of person you're dealing with.
What type of person is Trump? There was a moment last night that sticks in my head of when Trump was saying the masks are good and he took out his mask to show it. And then Biden started saying something about masks. And then Trump just flipped on a dime and started going off how, a lot of people say masks aren't good. Fauci said they're not good. Like, so what's the point of the contrarian? Like, what is there a political scientist term for that? Of like, didn't be that far of a contrarian at times?
Yeah. I think
just a jackass.
You mean where you disagree with your own statement you made 30 seconds earlier?
You made 30 seconds earlier because the other person agreed with it, who's your enemy in your mind.
Desperate, I think, is the word we use. Yeah. Yeah.
So should we wrap it up, guys?
Yeah.
We can cut this out if it doesn't work. But I just want to try something on before we leave, because all of us have been pretty dismissive and not pro-Trump in this, I think. If one of us were, as a very intelligent, rational actor, in favor of Trump, how do you think we would have perceived what we were watching? Mm. I think if I were to do that, if I were in that camp, I think I would have said, I don't care about the bluster. In fact, I find it kind of funny and everybody's freaking out. But I care about the economy, or I care about the stock market and all of the rest of that's for show. And he's very good at angering the people that I don't care about. I think that's how I would approach it. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I came across people on Twitter and Facebook and everything who are pro-Trump. And so I can tell you how they approached it.
Sure. Yeah.
They thought giant success for Trump. And the big win was that he got Biden to stoop to his level. Basically, when Biden called him the worst president in history, or Biden was like, you're a fool, they were like, yeah, they were cheering for those. They're like, ha ha, we got you. Ha, you thought you're a statesman, but you're saying things that Trump would say.
Exactly. Okay. I saw pro-Trump people I know saying, like, oh, I can't watch this. They're both being so crazy to each other, which is that's the whole thing. And then the only other thing I would say is that the stock market thing. And then I know people who are like, Trump's great on Israel. And this is the Jews talking, some Jews. And Obama.
The other Mike.
Yeah, the other Mike. And the Biden is part. They hate Obama because of Israel stuff. So that's like, they just will hang on that one issue. and they'll ignore everything right. else and be like, oh, what did he do? 47 years, all that stuff. And the whole 47 right, year right. thing is going to stick with Trump people.
Right. And they could have also said, like, well, Biden didn't engage with any of the issues around his son, around Hunter Biden. He just sort of totally ignored that and tried to distract by talking about his other son.
Yeah.
And you could say that, you know, what Trump said, we can take all these out of context and really ruin some of my friendships. But the thing that Trump was saying that, like, hey, yeah, the liberal media is always going to make me look bad no matter what. I mean, he's not wrong that he typically looks bad in most media. And so you could say, yeah, this is just another example. And I think you're right that anytime Biden got riled up whatsoever, you could have pointed to that and said it's both of their fault, if that's something that bothered you.
And I'll say as a closing thought, I think the real winner of the debate was Kanye West.
Oh, right.
The real winner of the debate was anybody not like Joe Jorgensen. Great
Libertarian.
Job. Way to not appear in the debate. Kanye West.
Are they going
to
hold on another debate with Jorgensen and Kanye and Jill Stein?
That would be I hope that happens.
Is Jill Stein like,
No, she's not the. It's I believe Howie Hawkins is the Green Party candidate this year. No, if Kanye jumped in on that, that'd be great because the people would actually watch it. That would be phenomenal.
They might,
but I don't think he's doing any debates. I could be wrong.
Yeah, but you're right. He won.
Yeah.
Kanye 2020.
Well, what? And gang, I feel like we have at least redeemed America through our chat today.
Yes.
I have greatly enjoyed talking to you all. And can we go around real quick and do our shows once again to induce our respective listeners to broaden their worlds and be happy all the time?
Yes, I will start first with us. I just want to say, Lost in America listeners, if you're listening through our feed, go on and check out everybody else's show. We will have links to their shows in our in the description of our podcast. Andrea's is currently a YouTube show, right? But it'll be a podcast very soon.
Yep.
Heaton's a podcast. Check them out. Lost in, if you're not one of our listeners, come join us. Join the party over at Lost in America. Yep. You get every single week, we talk to a different comedian in a city around the world with some global event happening in that city. So if you're a fan of The Economist, if you're reading The Economist and you want it explained to you by a comedian, come check us out. It's me. It's Kaplan. We put it out on Mondays. The real Mike Kaplan.
Mike Kaplan spelled properly, not with a Q.
Michael Ira Kaplan.
Kaplan. Serious version.
Yeah, the only night in podcasting. And that's every Monday on iTunes. Go to lostinamericapod.com or just look us up on your podcast.
And on YouTube,
iTunes,
Wednesdays.
Spotify, everywhere. Oh, and it's a YouTube show, too. You can watch us as well. Go to YouTube. Check out Lost in America Podcasts. That's it for us.
And I'll say similar to that to my listeners, I love all of you. You're all very funny and fun to talk to and interesting people. And I think that if you like my program, you will probably like Andrea's program and Mike and Turda's program as well. And on top of that, we are, I'm going to say, an adjacent without being overlapping material, meaning you could listen to any one of our podcasts any day of the week and you're not going to hear the same thing. You're going to hear something that is funny and intelligent, but a completely different thing. So you're not going to get worn out by it, which I enjoy. And for your respective listeners, the Political Orphanage beckons you. If you are one of these people that is tired of the anger and noise and rancor, my podcast is about basically how to fix things, how policy works, and how people think instead of anecdotal strings of evidence of why red team is evil and blue team is evil and all of that stuff. If you're not a part of that, if you're a part of the exhausted majority, come hang out at the Political Orphanage. And then on Fridays, we just joke about like Florida and stuff.
Yeah. So, and I can say to my listeners of Ask a Political Scientist, one of the reasons I wanted to join forces with these guys is that these really are the two other podcasts that are trying to do what I am trying to do and what I think you're coming to my show for, which is to actually be smarter about what's going on and maybe enjoy thinking about things and have it be in a slightly more pleasant way than reading the news outright and having to scream at it. So, and one of the other things to think about is that Heaton's podcast is awesome if you actually want to say, well, what about the policies and what would actually work and what could we actually do about that, because we never talk about that in the news. And Lost in America Pod is awesome because they get great comedians, some of whom are my friends around the world, but also it's really nice to not think about the United States every now and again. And I will say on my show, we have been hyper-focused on the U.S. I'll try to expand that out as well. But as Heaton said, they really aren't overlapping, but I think would appeal to folks with similar interests and similar sensibilities and a similar being sick of all the noise that we're shouting about. And for my show, you want to come to my show for the big picture. We ask questions that political scientists are asking, which is sort of like zooming way out and saying, well, why is it this way in the first place? Are we getting more polarized? What do we mean if we say we're getting more polarized? What is a political party? Why do we even have them? Why do we just have two? What are the ways to vote that are actually fair? big, deeper kind of almost philosophical questions like that, but all backed up with math and evidence. So and we pair them with comedians and journalists and practitioners, so we connect to the real world as well. And that's Thursdays on YouTube. And indeed, there will be an audio version to come.
And Fiorina, the political.
Yeah,
and
that's right. And
good he's night, not been on my show
good
yet.
Good night, Morris,
but I guess
Fiorina, wherever Fiorina. You are.
Yes.
And that was it, Cap. That was the show. How was it? That was pretty good, right?
That was, I can see why the president developed this coronavirus, faked it, because after he heard that, he knew this episode was coming. He knew everyone was going to be talking about the debate and his performance. And he decided, I got to change the narrative.
So thank you to Andrew Heaton. Thank you to Andrea Jones-Roy. We're very excited to be at the World's Smartest Podcast Network. We will soon have a page on iTunes. That's where you can click on World's Smartest Podcast Network and see all of our shows. We will soon have a website, worldsmartestpodcastnetwork.com. All that is coming very soon. In the meantime, just start listening to them. Please rate and review our show, Lost in America. Give us 5 stars. Leave us a little note. And come to our Patreon. If you join our Patreon show too, in Lost in America, it is Kaplan and I learning about the world. On Live from the Bunker, it is the world learning about us. So if you want to hear about us 3 days a week, go to patreon.com/lostinamerica. Cap, that's it. Let's get lost.
Get lost.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.